Well, those of you who were able to make it this morning, appreciate your attendance. Brandon mentioned many, who are sick and not able to be with us because of other reasons also. And we need to remember those people in our prayers. And I know in the near future there will be a lot more, at least who are traveling, so we need to remember those in our prayers as well as they go about their travels. My family and I are actually going to be out of town next week, and because of that, I'll be speaking both times today, and then Gene will have both times the next week when we're gone. So I appreciate his willingness to do that. As I mentioned last week, I believe someone had asked me to speak about Pharisees and about the idea of modern day Pharisees. And we didn't talk about that last week. Instead, we talked about the idea of hypocrisy. And that was really, I mentioned, a lead-in to what we are going to talk about today in the idea of Pharisees and how that the idea of hypocrisy is so closely related to Pharisees or Phariseeism or that type of attitude that somebody might have. But so today we're going to talk about it, and it's broken up into two different lessons, I guess. And that's really more than anything just a function of time, because to cover all the material that we want to cover would take some time. So it was either going to be a really long lesson this morning or two short ones, and so I opted for two shorter ones. I'm sure you appreciate that. But in the religious world as a whole, being known as a Pharisee is something that's pretty undesirable. Nobody wants to be known as a Pharisee. And people who don't even know much about the Bible will tell you that one thing you don't want to be is a Pharisee. That's not a desirable trait to have. And oftentimes people who are concerned with following the word specifically and doing what God would have us to do, they can even earn that name Pharisee. And we talked about last time, that's not really accurate. That's not really what a Pharisee would be. But we talked about how the condemnation of the Pharisees throughout the New Testament really centered around their hypocrisy and some of those aspects, some of those negative aspects. It's really interesting, as you read through the New Testament, we kind of get this picture of a Pharisee, and we'll talk about that picture in just a little while. But it's interesting that prior to Jesus coming onto the scene, the idea of a Pharisee was not considered a negative thing at all. Pharisees were not negative in the people's eyes, and in fact, that's probably a lot of the reason when Jesus found himself in contrast or in conflict, I guess, with the Pharisees, that it was not a surprise, because the Pharisees were well thought of. They were very influential in the synagogues. They were popular among the people, despite what we kind of view as a negative impression of them. And this all had to do with the fact that there was this new way that was coming about that Jesus was going to bring. And in fact, even Jesus says, he describes them as sitting in Moses' seat, the Pharisees. And the suggestion there is that they were teachers of the law, and that was a good thing. Now, in Matthew 23, we see a lot of those woe unto yous that Jesus has to say about the Pharisees, and so there's a great deal of criticism for that group as well. But he did make the observation that they served as teachers of the law. And so I think what we're going to find out today is that when we look at their origin, it was not maybe as bad as we kind of view them today. It kind of turned into that over time. And what I want to suggest to you, that there are some really, really important lessons that we can learn from this Jewish sect of the first century, the Pharisees. And we talked last time again about kind of the groundwork, the hypocrisy, and we're going to see that. We're going to see that developed a little further today. And so kind of how I've broken up today is this morning I want to state the problem. I want to identify what the real problem is with the Pharisees and that type of thinking and how that came about. And then tonight, I want us to try to apply that to us today as Christians. And so we can see how we can guard against this problem that Jesus condemns time and time again throughout the New Testament, this problem of Phariseeism that involves hypocrisy and other things that we're going to talk about. But I want to start by explaining from Scripture exactly what the error or the errors of the Pharisees were. And I think sometimes people today don't really have a good grasp of what was wrong with the Pharisees. What was the problem with the Pharisees? Why was that an issue? And the point of it all is to guard against and to make sure that we don't get caught up in their errors. That's the point of today. That's the point of talking about Pharisees, is to encourage us not to fall into that same category. And you say, well, how can we? We're not under the old law, and we don't have a creed per se that we're gonna talk about as far as the Pharisees are concerned. But the truth is that even under the New Testament law, the new way that was established, the gospel, we can fall into the exact same error that the Pharisees fell into. And what you might find out is maybe we have, in some areas, fallen into the exact same error. But as we think about the Pharisees, we get this mental picture of the Pharisee. And if you want to turn to Luke 18, we're going to start there, because our picture of the Pharisee largely probably comes from passages like we see in Luke 18 in this parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, and we're going to read that. But there are other passages along these same lines that indicate the some character traits of the Pharisees. And let's read Luke 18. Begin with me in verse 9. And he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, "God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all I possess." And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be abased, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." So both of them were offering this prayer, and we see the Pharisee, and we see this concept of self-righteousness, and that's the kind of the way that he came across. And in fact, Luke prefaces the parable by noting that Jesus told it to those who thought themselves to be righteous, but really despised others. And they were hypocritical. And they were consumed with themselves. And if you look over in Matthew 23, and you may want to just put a marker in Matthew 23, because we're going to go there several times this morning. Jesus describes them also here. "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for pretense make long prayers. Therefore you will receive great condemnation." So again, here is the idea, the same kind of concept that we were looking at with the prayer and the inappropriate ways that they were going about that, as we saw in the example of the parable. Jesus kind of points directly to them and is more direct about it here. And he says that they devour widows' houses. And these are just people that are misdirected, and then they just seem like bad people. He made it clear that they were very critical of others. And that kind of goes against the idea of humility that we just read. But the picture in the parable that we looked at in Luke 18 is a picture of extreme opposites. But the truth is it was probably a pretty accurate portrayal of the attitude of the Pharisee. And it may seem even a little comical or extreme, like nobody would ever really do that. But it was probably a pretty accurate portrayal historically of the Pharisee. Over in Matthew 23 again, told everybody to put a marker there, and then I didn't do it. So let me get back to Matthew 23. In verse 23, again, he says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrite, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone." So they paid tithe of these small spices and things, these garden herbs that they might have had. And the point is that they weren't major crops, because the Jewish law required that people tithe of the crops that they grow. But these were just small kind of windowsill plants or something like that. But the Pharisees were very scrupulous about tithing even that, the little spices, and taking maybe the seed from a little spice and dividing them, counting those seeds and making sure that they tithed the proper amount. But the problem was is that they were neglecting the weightier things, the things that mattered the most. They were neglecting justice and mercy and faith. And I want you to listen again to the last of the verse. And you can see this in Luke's account in Luke 11 and 42. But Matthew says it here, or Jesus says it here in Matthew as well. He says, "These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone." You see, he doesn't condemn the Pharisees in their meticulous way and their meticulous observance of the law when they were maybe dividing these small spices. He says, "You're concerned with small details to the extent that you're missing the big picture. You're not seeing the things that really matter." So the picture that's painted by Jesus of the Pharisee in the New Testament, and we'll look at it a little more in depth in just a moment and tonight also, but the picture that Jesus painted, it was one of a self-righteous person. It was a hypocritical person, and they were consumed with these small details to the point that they were just missing the big picture. They didn't get what really mattered. Pharisees so concerned with presenting themselves as righteous on the outside with all these things, like we talked about, the hypocrisy, that they lost track of what true righteousness was. They didn't realize what true righteousness was. And Jesus talked about that in Matthew 23 again in verse 27. He says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you're like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and uncleanliness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." And this idea of whitewashed tombs, it has an interesting origin, because it's one of those things that kind of developed, I guess, over time. But there were three main feasts in Jerusalem. But if you remember, someone, if they were defiled, they couldn't go and they couldn't keep the feast. We read about in Numbers 9, I believe it is, some who were defiled and were not able to be a part of that. But everybody would travel to Jerusalem for the feast, and there were tombs along the way. And the tombs were caves, basically, in the sides of cliffs and everything. And somebody might inadvertently lean against that or rest against that and thus be defiled by accident. And they were unclean, and they couldn't partake in the feast at that point. So what happened is that they would whitewash these tombs. They would basically paint them white so that people could see, this is something that's unclean, and I don't need to go near that, or I might be in jeopardy of being defiled, so I can't keep the feast. Well, eventually that came to be a way to beautify the tombs. And the idea is that no matter how beautiful you make it on the outside, inside of that tomb is still what it is. It's a tomb. It's dead men. It's bones. It's decay. It's ugly, nasty stuff. And that's what he's saying about the Pharisees. They're still the same on the inside. And I think maybe to maybe get more to our point, that maybe the most important part of our understanding of the Pharisees, and this is going to take a little time to explain and make clear, but I think that that what we see in the New Testament is that the Pharisees are the result of a process. The Pharisees are what happens when it, or what happened, I guess, when a group of people used a method to confront or to challenge worldliness. They chose a method. This is how we're going to deal with worldliness. This is how we're going to deal with the world encroaching on our beliefs and our moral standards. This is how we're going to deal with that. So what they see, they recognize the problem, and so they nobly say, hey, we have this problem in front of us, and we have to resolve this problem. But the method that they chose to confront this problem was wrong. And ultimately, it was detrimental to them as people. The point is, they appeared on the scene because they wanted to do what was right. They just went about it the wrong way. And I think we can learn something from that. And I hope we can learn something from that today. So in order to appreciate what happened to this group and how they came about, I think we really have to understand their origin. We have to see where they came from, how they came about. And I'm going to warn you that at this point there's going to be a little bit of a history lesson. I know some people have this great dislike for history and everything, but if you'll bear with me through it, it does have a substantial impact, I think, on getting to an understanding of these Pharisees and their origin, so that we can avoid making the same mistakes. And to me, there's really no greater example than the Pharisees that it really makes true the saying that, you know, if you don't learn from your history, then you're bound to repeat it, and you're bound to make the same mistakes. And I think the same mistake that they fell into in the early first century, or prior to that, before Christ, is some of the same tendencies that we might have today. So the Pharisees were never mentioned in the Old Testament. We never see anything about a Pharisee in the Old Testament. They just kind of appear as we start reading the gospel account. So what that means is that they find their origin between the Old Testament and the New Testament. I guess more properly, they find their origin in that 300 years prior to the birth of Jesus. And that doesn't mean that they're fictitious or anything like that. It just means that that's the point in time that they came about. And it was this period, this period of time, the intertestamental period, that the Jews were an almost constant cultural war against the Greeks. And they were guarding very strongly against the Greek influence that came into them. And the Greeks were trying to Hellenize the Jews pretty aggressively. And so the culture faced the challenge. The Jews faced the challenge of this onslaught of sin, basically trying to be pressed upon them. So all of us are familiar with Alexander the Great. He was a conqueror who lived in the early 4th century B.C. And he is known historically as the Apostle of Hellenism. So that was kind of one of his goals. And Alexander the Great believed that the Greek culture was so superior that if they were ever able to unite themselves, that they could rule the world. And as you know, Alexander the Great, in a very short time, about 12 years, conquered a large majority of the Mediterranean world. But Alexander the Great died fairly young, and he had no successors. He had no living successors, I guess. So his empire was divided, and it was divided among his generals. And two of them were known as Ptolemy and Seleucus. And those two are the kind of the main guys that took over and we have to deal with. So we hear about the Ptolemies, and they control Egypt, and that was one of the areas that Alexander the Great conquered. And then the Seleucids, they control what was known, I guess still is known, as Syria. Well, the Ptolemies and the Seleucids took turns basically ruling Palestine. And they were different in their rule, but they were the same in some regards. The Ptolemies were first in control of the area of Palestine, and they pretty much allowed the Jews to go about their business and do what they wanted to do and conduct their own affairs. But the Seleucids were different. And so when the Seleucids came in, they were determined that they were going to Hellenize the Jews. And what that means is they were going to force them to accept Greek culture, take that on, and thus become what they would consider civilized by accepting this Greek culture. Well, there was one Seleucid. He was really this infamous Seleucid. Antiochus IV, or Antiochus Epiphanes. And he lived about 175 B.C. And this was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, really, both ways. But he got scared. And he got scared because he went to Egypt and he saw this great Roman influence that seemed to be overtaking Egypt, and he was scared that he was not going to be able to hang on to his territory, the territory that he controlled, which was Palestine and Jerusalem at the time. So when he comes back from Egypt, he decided in order to maintain his territory and keep his land, that he was going to get everybody on board with Greek culture. He was going to Hellenize everybody. That was what was going to happen. So in a very heavy-handed way, he began to aggressively Hellenize the Jews. And so what does that mean? Well, what that means is that he occupied Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And as you might know, very few Jews are going to fight on the Sabbath day to protect. So that's why he chose the Sabbath day. And on that particular occasion, he slaughtered thousands of Jews, and he sold thousands of others into slavery, and it was bad. He outlawed circumcision at this point in time as an attempt to Hellenize the Jews. And if you remember, circumcision was that Jewish rite of Jewish male. It's the way he was introduced into the nation on the eighth day of his life. And it was really a sign of his covenant relationship with God. But Antiochus said, no more. That's not going to happen anymore. We're not going to allow that anymore. And he outlawed the Sabbath observances and the feast days. And the penalty for any of these things, breaking any of these laws that he set up, was death. You'd be killed if you broke any of these. So he took copies of Hebrew scriptures and had them destroyed, and he took Greek deities and he put them into the temples, and he required that all of the Seleucid Empire, including the Jews, worship these deities. And then one of the major things that he did was he caused swine to be sacrificed on the temple altar. And that's significant because the swine obviously was an unclean animal, we know that. But that was an affront to God, that was a defilement of the altar that made the altar unclean. But the important part is that it couldn't be cleansed. They couldn't clean the altar could not be cleansed because of all the other rules, so it sat in defilement. And what this means, what all this means, is that this was a very, very dark time for the Jews as a nation. And it was really a time where they struggled, literally struggled to exist, to maintain their existence. Well, as you might know, and as you might imagine, that there was some opposition that rose up against what was going on. And the group particularly that rose up the strongest and the loudest was known as the Hasidim, or the pious ones. And basically they refused to do these things. They refused to adopt the Greek culture. And we know that the Jews would eventually throw off the oppressive rule of the Seleucid. And they would mainly do that by the leadership of the Maccabean family, and we all know, most of us have probably heard of Judas Maccabee, but the Maccabees were leaders among the Hasidim, so that was this group. So that's really important in the history, and this is really important in the history. The Pharisees were the ideological descendants of the Hasidim, so all of their concepts, all of their thoughts, all of their standards, and their way of operating was the same as the Pharisees. They were kind of their descendants in that regard. The Hasidims were the ones who said, "We're going to keep the law no matter what. We're not going to yield to this impurity. We're going to stay pure before God." And the Pharisees had the same concept. They said, we need to keep the law, we need to keep it meticulously, we need to remain pure in this world, it really just seems to be going to the Greeks. OK, Okay, so what's the problem with Greek culture? And we talked about a couple of those things, but it's important to realize that this is not just a cultural challenge that they're facing. So broadly speaking, it contradicted the law of Moses. If you'll turn to Exodus, and we can look at the Ten Commandments, I guess, as somewhat of a broad view of that. If you turn to Exodus 20, that's where we find the Ten Commandments. And real quickly, I'll start with verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me. Verse 4, you shall not make of yourself a carved image. Verse 7, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. 8, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 12, honor your father and your mother. 13, you shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. And I won't read the rest of that right now. We'll read the rest in just a second. But on all these things, if you look at them, these were the things that were denied by the Greeks. And these were the things that were looked at differently. And more broadly than just the specific Ten Commandments, the entire law was really looked down on. And there was no distinction between things like clean and unclean. So the Jews were encouraged from a cultural standpoint to eat things that the law of Moses forbid, that were a defilement to them. They were wearing different clothes. Some of those had to do with modesty, the problems there. They had to give up their language in some cases. And really, I guess to put it, the overall answer to the question of what's wrong with Greek culture is that they just had a different set of moral standards. They just operated differently. They didn't have the same moral fabric that the Jews would have had. And then, of course, as we read in Exodus, there's this idea of other gods. And as we know, Hellenism involved the worship of Greek deities, and the Greeks had a pantheon group of gods that they worshiped, just like the Romans did. But if Greek culture was adopted, you were going to be involved in all these things. You were going to be involved in idolatry. It was part of the culture. It was part of entertainment. It was even part of business. And so all of these things were influencing. So the problem with the Greek culture is that in order to take on the Greek culture, they were going to have to leave their law. The Jews would have to leave their law, and they would have to live like pagans. And during the intertestamental period, when all this was going on, this was a huge problem. And I'll tell you, a huge number of Jews were conquered by Greek influence. And so when Jesus comes onto the scene, you kind of see that. You see that that influence being there if you understand the history. And you might have heard of the phrase Galilee of the Gentiles. And that really explains further why there was such this built-in anger of the Pharisees that they had for Jesus. Because what that reflects is, it reflects the fact that Palestine at that time, and if you remember, Galilee was in the north and Samaria was in the middle, very bad thoughts of Samaria, and then Judea was in the south. Well, Galilee and the north tended to be more Gentile in influence than Judea did in the south. So the Orthodox people came from Judea, and that's why Jesus was kind of looked down on by the Pharisees, because, of course, Jesus was Galilee, right? He was a prophet from Galilee of the Gentiles. And on the other side of Galilee was the Decapolis, and that was the League of Ten Cities that Alexander the Great had set up to Hellenize the area, and it was very successful. So anyway, Jesus was from that area that was viewed more as Gentile and bad. So Jesus, in some ways, really personified the problem that the Pharisees had faced for all these years, in their minds at least. He was kind of part of that problem. He was the influence coming in from the world. He was that Greek influence a little bit coming into him. So they would adopt those things. Well, those who remained faithful were the Hasidim, and those who followed in their footsteps were, of course, the Pharisees, and they were bothered by this digression among the Jews. And you think about, why would they be bothered by it so much? Why would it concern them so much? But you don't have to think too far to remember some of their history. And do you remember in the Old Testament why Israel ceased to become a nation? To have their own land? Turn with me to Psalm 106. In Psalm 106 and verse 34, we read, "They did not destroy the people concerning whom the Lord had commanded them, but they mingled with the Gentiles and learned their works. They served their idols, which became a snare to them. They even sacrificed their sons and their daughters to demons, and they shed innocent blood, the blood of their sons and daughters, who they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan. And the land was polluted with blood, and they were defiled by their own works and played the harlot to their own deeds." What happened to the people? They were influenced by those around them. Turn back to Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter. In Deuteronomy 6, let's begin in verse 10. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 10. "So it shall be when the Lord your God brings you into the land of which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities which you did not build, houses full of good things which you did not fill, hewn out wells which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant. When you have eaten and are full, then beware, lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. You shall fear the Lord your God and serve him, and shall take oaths in his name. You shall not go after other gods, the gods of people who are around you. For the Lord your God is a jealous God among you. Lest the anger of the Lord your God be aroused against you and destroy you from the face of the earth, you shall not tempt the Lord your God as you tempted him at Massah. You shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God, his testimonies, his statutes, which he commanded you, and you shall do what is right in the sight, right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may be well with you, that you may go and possess the good land which the Lord swore to your fathers to cast your enemies out from among you, as the Lord has spoken. When your sons ask you in time to come, saying, 'What is the meaning of the testimonies, the statutes and the judgments which your Lord our God has commanded you?' Then you shall say to your son, 'We were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And the Lord showed signs and wonders before our eyes, great and severe against Egypt, Pharaoh, and his house, and all his household. And they brought us out from there, and he might bring us in to give us the land of which he swore to our fathers. And the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is this day. Then it will be righteousness for us if we are careful to observe all these commandments before the Lord our God, and he has commanded us, as he has commanded us." And they didn't do it. And all of these things that were warnings, and all of these warnings that God gave, they didn't do. And in Deuteronomy 9, we see the rebellion of the people, and it's kind of chronicled what all their rebellion. And then finally, the last passage I want to read here is in Deuteronomy 28. And this is kind of here's your options. 28 and verse 1 says, "Now it shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, and observe carefully all his commandments which I commanded you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth." And then look over in verse 15. "But it shall come to pass, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments and his statutes, which I commanded you today, that all these curses will be upon you and overtake you." So in spite of all the warnings, and in spite of all the forbearance of God, really, they became like the people around them, is what happened in the Old Testament. The Jews became like the people around them. The people of Israel married others. They began serving those gods of the other people. They conformed themselves to the culture that was around them. And then finally, God destroyed Solomon's temple, and his people were carried off into other lands. So now the Hasidim see their countrymen. The Pharisees see their countrymen. And they're falling into the exact same mistake that their forefathers had fallen into. And they saw that the outcome of this was basically the end of a nation. And they see the same thing happening. They're doing the exact same thing. It's with the Greek culture this time, but it's the same thing is going on. Do you think they were concerned about that? Yeah. They were concerned about that. They were concerned about repeating that history, about doing the very same thing that the people before them had done. And the Hasidim said, "We are not going to let this happen." The Pharisees said, "We're not going to let this happen." And so they would try to stop it. But in doing so, and we're going to talk about this tonight, in doing so, what they would create for themselves is a history that shouldn't be repeated, because it was a mistake too. How they went about this problem that we've laid out and we've stated clearly was wrong, and they created a history that doesn't need to be repeated. So what did they do? Well, we've stated the problem. There was this challenge facing them to encourage their fellow, their countrymen, their fellow brothers and sisters to stay faithful to the law. And that was a real problem. And again, it had proven fatal for people in the past. Not too terribly long ago. They had to do something. Does this history sound familiar at all to us? Do we face dangers from the influence of the world? We think about American culture. Does the American culture match up to the Christian culture? Those don't align very well, do they? We need to do what the Pharisees and what the Hasidim attempted to do, and that is encourage brethren to stay faithful. But the question is, how do we do that? How do we accomplish that? We're going to look at how the Hasidim and ultimately the Pharisees addressed this problem. And we're going to learn from that mistake. We're going to realize what they did that was right and what they did that was wrong. And we're going to learn from that. And I'm going to warn you, we might even notice that we can tend to make some of the same mistakes today. We may recognize some of those mistakes as the same ones that we've actually already made. And we might even see some of the same results that they had in ourselves today. But what we better do is we better see how they did it, and we better learn from their mistakes, and we better do better, because we can do better and we must do better. So tonight we'll talk about how do they solve the problem. And even more importantly than how did they solve the problem that faced them, how are we going to solve the problem? Because we have to do better. We have to do better than the Pharisees did. And we're going to see some of their flaws, and we're going to learn from those. If you want to, take out your songbooks. We're going to sing Psalm 272 as an encouragement. And this was really not a lesson about becoming a Christian or first principles kind of thing, but it is about serving God, and it's about serving God the right way. This was about a group of people who cared about God and cared about trying to please Him. They were misguided. And we've got to correct that in our lives. But what we see is a people who care. Well, now we, as a people, if we can purely be guided by God's Word and know through that how to righteously access the grace of God that saves souls, then that's the right way. And there's a lot of other things we're going to talk about as far as the Pharisees. But as far as obedience, we have all we need to be able to make a good, sound, solid decision about our life and about our service to God. And so if you have explored the Scripture, and if you have come to the understanding of what it takes to become a Christian and be a servant of God's. Then you have an opportunity now, and you have the opportunity at all times, as long as life continues, you have that opportunity. But there's no better time than right now, and it might be the last time. So I would encourage you, if you have come to that determination that serving God is what you need to do, then serve God. And if you have come to that determination, you know what you need to do in order to serve Him. You know if your life as a Christian needs to start today. You know if your life as a Christian needs to get back on the path today. You know. So if you need to make those changes, the encouragement is for you to make those changes and to make your life right with God. And if we can help you in any way, please come as we stand and sing.